Welcome to the Northeast Divide podcast. Thank you very much for listening on your free podcast provider or watching us on YouTube. I'm your host, John Lane. I'm joined, as I always have been, by Anth. And we are here to discuss the two largest football clubs in the Northeast, Newcastle United and Sunderland Football Club. So this evening, we're going to start. So Anth, I went to town last night and I watched the match with... couple of friends from the True Faith podcast, and then we recorded our show live. Well, I say live, it wasn't streaming or anything, but we recorded in person in the studio after. And it's probably one of the most depressing podcasts I've done in some ways. I really enjoy it. They're good crack, but I think it feels like, you know, we were talking about the apathy last week. It just feels like maybe that's happening to us too in terms of what's left to play for the season if we're not going to get the results. You watched the match last night, did you? What was your thoughts?
I caught the second half. Do you know what it was? It was an entertaining game. And when Murphy came on, yes. Was it second half he came on? And I think his first touch was to ping a crossing, which wasn't far off. So, you know, that attacking edge, I mean, he's got a bit of quality about him. And his goal, thunderous. I'll not say what I said to you when I messaged you last night, because obviously, you know, there might be children.
Thunder bastard. Yeah,
that
yeah.
was the one. Yeah. Sod the children. Anyway, no, I don't mean that. I thought he's played quite well in spells, but I don't know. Like, I think it's petering out, isn't it? It's a bit like our season. It's sort of gone.
I think the thing is, we've got the FA Cup tie on Saturday, and as optimistic as I'd like to be about that, if Anthony Gordon's injured, I think we're fucked, right? And there are probably nicer words I could have used than that, but I kind of think that's where we are. We weren't looking too clever going at that game anyway, but you lose a player like that, it all of a sudden becomes a hell of a lot more difficult. But we are 3 points off seventh. Top seven will get you Europe this year. And it could go as far down. If the winner of the FA Cup is Liverpool or Man City or Man United, then seventh will get you will get you European football this year, guaranteed. If the coefficient comes in, if England are in the top two for the coefficient, eighth will get you European football. So, look, we're only 3 points off that. There's 9-10 games to go, something like that. I'm just kind of the opinion that it's really easy to look at this stuff and kind of melt down and just think the world's over and that we've got nothing to play for. That we've been joking on True Faith in the WhatsApp group, saying, fuck the league. Because it was all about the FA Cup and we all wanted to win the cup. But I think in reality, we've got an opportunity to play for Europe. And I don't think that's dead. And I think if you look at the hardest fixture we've got left on paper, and I understand the game's on played on paper, everyone who's watching or listening, you know, the hardest game we've probably got left is Man United away, and they're shite. And we've beaten them 3-0 this year we're second string. We made them look like schoolboys. We were excellent that night. So, look, we've got 10 games. Eddie Howe won't give up on the season. And the 11th game we've got, of course, is on Saturday, which no doubt we'll talk about later. I must admit, I was watching it last night and I was thinking, wonder what kind of conversation I'm going to have with Anth tomorrow, because, you know, the conversation we were having about your season last week, but I suppose it's a little bit different. So let's talk about it. Sorry to bring it up. I was trying to be optimistic about your chances down at St. Mary's, and yeah, do you want to give us a bit of an overview about what happened?
Oh, not good. Not good. You know what? Six in a row, but the wrong kind of six in a row.
I'm glad you said this.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go. Leggy, tired. Second half, we improved. I think the likes of Leo Held, I can't pronounce her name, Jensen Sealed, who have done okay. I think they're showing now that they're not maybe first team players, as in they wouldn't be in the first 11 under normal circumstances, but with the injury list, they are there. The likes of Barr, he played him on the left. Dodds played him on the left. He just looked out of sorts. And I mean, that fueled the fire for his critics, because he's got plenty of those, the lad. And again, we just looked off the pace. The likes of Bellingham giving away the clearance for the opening goal, early goal for Southampton. Rigg gave away a penalty. He learned from that. He's 16 years old. You know what I mean? Mason Burstow, I don't know what I think. He played him up front on his own. It's a lot of responsibility for a young lad. And yes, he hit the post from a difficult angle, but he was anonymous for the rest of the match. We're missing that experience, I think. We're missing that experience. We missed 09. I know 09's got his critics as well, but I think we've really missed him. And obviously Ballard's going to be out now, so there's two massive holes in our defence. So, yeah, it was nice to see Mundell get his opening goal, albeit with a deflection. But we just looked leggy and tired, and I think it's beginning to show now that we've got a young squad who, you know, I mean, I'm glad that he benched Ekwa. I thought that was a brave decision. I mean, I would have benched him a good few games ago. But, you know, we're just, just the tactics as well, we're a little bit sort of, you know, he's still trying different things, Dodds. But with the players at his disposal, it's difficult. And it was a difficult afternoon.
I think there's two things, and it's interesting because you could probably level a couple of these things at Newcastle as well. It's about experience and a bit of leadership. Now, we're lucky we have got some leaders on that pitch, but we don't have as many as we have had. When you look through the leadership group, it was only Dan Byrne that was on the field last night that actually, and it obviously wore the armband. But Trippier's out, Wilson's out, Matt Ritchie's never going to be starting, and you know, in the nicest way, he's not good enough to start. And Lascelles again is in and around the squad, but he's, you know, he's not, you know, again, he's not on the field. So I think we missed that. And then the experience in midfield, you know, we have Bruno, Willock and Longstaff who started, but Longstaff's looked a shadow of himself in the last few weeks. And there was a lot of talk about people wanting Miley in the side, and you know, I think Miley's had a great season, but similarly, you have to make sure you don't overburden these youngsters with football. And I think you're right. I think the issue you've got is you need some leaders, and I think you need some experience. And you have your biggest leaders, you know, the likes of 09 and Ballard, you know, aren't around. So who's going to step up? Who's going to kind of help do that? I think Pritchard was probably a bit of a leader for you on the pitch as well. As you know, and you lost him in January, and you can't keep, and you know, Mike Ashley did this with Newcastle. You know, he didn't like the leaders, he wanted them out because it was too much like angst and animosity between the players and the ownership. So you know, it was about kind of cleansing that. Hullett did the same, you know, as well, like, you know, distance himself from all of that. So it can really hurt you, and I don't think Sunderland have done it like purposefully,
no,
necessarily. I just think that they're in terms of the model, and they have to make sure that they're financially sustainable because you don't want the other option. But it's how do you get build that experience back in, and how do you manage to do that to get you to a point where actually you're in a position to be a little bit more competitive, build a bit of a foundation, and then, you know, attack the top six next year.
Well, that's the next thing, isn't it, with regards to are we building for next season already? There's rumours abound that Lazio, who were interested in Clark previously, are now going for a double swoop. They're going for Bellingham and Clark. And if that's true, you know, I know that's part of the model you sell on the players that have improved for a hefty profit. I know we discussed it last week with Jack Clark, how he fluffed his lines against Newcastle. And that was his big sort of, you know, his big showcase as such. Didn't quite step up to the occasion, but never mind. So, but those are the sort of players we're going to need next season. The question is, can we keep them? I was looking at the table earlier on, and it didn't make for grim viewing. I mean, what are we now? We're 11 points outside the playoffs, and we're 9 points off the bottom three. Okay. Borough, however, are 11th now, just above us, 3 points ahead and 1 game in hand. Now, this is what Borough always do. They always get the momentum towards the end of the season, and they always push on.
Right time to do it.
Exactly. Now we're not. So I just I know, and I just again the experience thing. I mean, they used to talk about mixing silk with steel, didn't they? With regards, you can have your silky players, but you need those steely players as well. And you know, have we got that kind of player? I know we've got 09, and you know he can mix it up a little bit, and he's a bit of a shithouse, but you know I love him. So yeah, I don't know. I feel deflated. But I don't think we're going to get relegated. And I think, you know, we'll just have to look ahead to next season now. But, yeah, wait and see.
I mean, 50 points pretty much would have you safe in the championship. And you're on 47 right now. I know you've lost your last six. You know, you don't want to make it 7 in a row, 8 in a row, which may have been talks you had previously about something different. But I can't really remember, you know. Gone out of my head really, but you know you've got nine games left to get 3 points. Mm-hmm. Now I think even Rotherham, who have lost God knows how many games in a row, at least 5 according to the BBC, they'll probably get 3 points before the end of the season in mm-hmm. some way, shape or form, whether that's one game, whether that's drawing 3. So look, you're not going down, I think, you know, but you're 11 points off the playoffs, and that's going to take some momentum to break, and mm-hmm. it's kind of, I think that's where the reality is setting in for, you know, Newcastle as a fan base. Like, we're aware that we're not going to make the Champions League this year, because, you know, we look at the Premier League table, you know, there's just too many points now behind, you know, even if fifth place, that's 13 points we've got to make up on mm-hmm. Spurs, and they've got a game in hand over us. Villa are 15 points ahead of us, haven't played the same amount of games. Now, we're not mm-hmm. going to outscore Villa by 15 points before the end of the year. Like, that they're not losing like 5 or 6 games.
No.
And we're not going to win all 10. So, you know, really, realistically, I think the highest that we're probably looking at is Man United in 6. But even then, they're 7 points ahead of us now. Mm-hmm. 7th place is realistic. And as I say, we're only 3 points behind that. It's really tight between 7th and 11th in the league. Chelsea are a point behind us. And then above us, we've got, you know, Wolves, Brighton, West Ham. So I think we're lucky. I feel like, you know, in the nicest way, we've got something to play for. I think you're right. I think really it's about pride for Sunderland now till the end of the year. And as you say, getting ready for next season. But the other thing you have to think about is, you talk about the model and selling players at the right time. You've got to sell the right players at the right time for the right mm-hmm. price. It's not just a matter of, oh, well, that's doubled or tripled what we bought him for, so he's worth shipping out now. It's about how you get that balance right, and don't undersell what you've got, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Something I wanted to talk about this week, and so there's been a lot of talk on Tyneside about the possibility of Newcastle United leaving St James's Park. So there's started to be some things mentioned by journalists, which tends to make you think some things are starting to drip through, and this is obviously an option that Newcastle United are considering. Now, I'll not say how old you were at the time, but you're probably of an age when Sunderland left Roker Park, where actually you're pretty engaged with the football club, and you kind of had a bit of, I don't know, basically more awareness of what was going on. So I was pretty young at that time. So what was it, 96 you moved in, or 97 you moved into mm-hmm. Stadium of Light, wasn't it, from Roker Park? It yep. would have been. So I would have been about 11. So give us an overview, because kind of obviously there would have been a process between being in Roker Park and then talking about the new stadium and building the new stadium. And what was that like? Because like, I see loads of cynicism online about kind of, you know, and we'll get into it in a bit, about kind of the move away from St James's Park and what that could mean. But like, The difference between what Roker Park was in the nicest way is a bit of a garden shed ground to a palace, really, for the Stadium of Light. And I'll get ridiculed for saying that as a Newcastle fan, but it's a great stadium that you've got there. What was it? Talk to me about kind of the fan attitudes towards it. Was there cynicism or that kind of thing?
Do you know what? There's a lot of romanticism, isn't there, towards the old grounds. We'll not call them stadiums because it was a ground. Roker Park, I loved it. I loved Roker Park. I was a steward there. I don't think I've ever mentioned that to you before.
No, you haven't.
I was a steward there for a season and a half when I was 19 years old. And I've seen some, I've heard, well, I was on the back gate of the clock stand, basically one of the back gates. That's where I was, and used to snap the little plastic thing off at the end when everyone used to leave, and they left in droves. At the time, we weren't performing ever so well, and people were allowed back in. I mean, it's all changed now. But anyway, Roker Park, love Roker Park. When I had my first season ticket, it was in the Fulwell End. I was, 16 years old?
Always full of Fulwell End, but I'll not sing there we the go. The song.
Yeah, I knew as soon as I mentioned the Fulwell End. Anyway, yeah. So, you're throwing us a bit there. So, yeah, I was 16 year old. I was a kid at technical college. I got my season ticket on the back in 1990, Italian 90. I missed the first match, however, against Tottenham at home, where we drew 0-0. With Gazza in his pomp coming back from Italian 90 and Lineker. And it wasn't a great season, obviously, because we got relegated. But the atmosphere at the ground for certain matches. I remember a tea time kickoff against Arsenal in the pissing down rain. And it was on the match on a Saturday afternoon on ITV. Now, that was a big thing at the time. And the atmosphere was just fantastic. I think we drew 0-0 at Arsenal at the time. Gary Rowes had a fantastic effort, which Seaman tipped round the post. And we all romanticise about these grounds, but I remember standing at the back gate in the clock stand when we used to score a goal, which again was rare at the time. And Bovril used to pour through from the upper tier, and the wires were exposed. And I was like, my God, in this day and age, we would be closed down. So yeah, you know. And I remember going to big matches. I was just reminiscing with regards to the 6-0 win against Millwall when Craig Russell, the Jarrett Arrow, got four. Me and my mate were in the main stand paddocks. The atmosphere was electric. They were top of the table at the time. We were sort of there or thereabouts. Reedy had got us playing well and stringing results together. It was amazing. The atmosphere, I don't think it'll ever be matched, to be fair. And I lived a stone's throw from the ground as well, which was great. But I'll be honest with you, me and my mates were pretty positive about the move. We wanted somewhere. We wanted a new home. We wanted somewhere to be proud of. Obviously, it needed to be all seater. You know, obviously going back to the Taylor report and blah, blah, blah. So it was a nice, shiny new model. And I think Bob Murray, the way he sourced everything to build that ground and how he did it and the budget he did it on is now phenomenal. When you consider that Manchester United, some of the rumours going around, it's going to cost billions of pounds now, isn't it, to move from Old Trafford, or to even look into improving Old Trafford, £1 billion, £2 billion, I've heard, maybe. So I was quite happy and I was quite positive, and a lot of my friends were.
So how, in terms of the geography of it, Ant, because I'm not great on this, right? So I know where the Stadium of Light is now, but I'm not really sure kind of where it is in relation to Roker Park and the difference that would have made.
Not far at all. I mean, basically, you used to come out of Roker Park now, which has got houses on there. A couple of mates live on that estate. And you go up Roker Baths Road. You cut through Tizix, you cross over the bridge now, and you're on Newcastle Road, and then you're at the Stadium of Light, basically, if you walk into the back lane next to
the Connery
Tavern.
How far is that, then, roughly?
Not that far. 10-15 minute walk. 10-15 minute walk, if that.
About a mile and a bit, something
like
that.
Yeah, and I mean, Roker Park, for where it was, it, like I say, the atmosphere, the Roker Raw really did send shivers up your spine. It used to just build and build and come from nowhere. But I'm not going to lie, it was Baltic, and I mean testicle shrinkingly cold in that ground, be it not even in a winter, just on a normal day. Honestly, when that wind came in from the sea, the North Sea, it was bitter. And you were unshielded in that Roker End, the Fulwell End. Obviously, we had that ramshackle roof, but it wasn't great. So I loved that ground. I people do romanticize about the Roker Raw, and we've got that. However, the atmosphere has been at the Stadium Light, we haven't recreated that. I don't think so anyway. But I was glad of the move, to be perfectly honest with you. I was at the time.
So the reason I talk about this, as I say, is obviously there's been all sorts kind of said. And as I say, there was a podcast that was done by True Faith. And they released a snippet of a video. And I don't know if you've seen it. So the guy talking in it is one of the editors at 442, a guy called Matthew Ketchell. And he basically went through, Ketch went through, you know, kind of what his ideal shopping list would be if you're going to build a new stadium for Newcastle United, and he basically said it needs to be multi-purpose. It needs to be, you know, 80, 90,000 seater. It needs to be able to be used all year round. And there was a lot of uproar about that. Now, the one thing he did say is it absolutely has to still stay in the city centre. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably one of the hardest elements to do, because then you start thinking, well, where could it be? What site could it be? You know, is Leasers Park feasible? Is that something that that the council would be happy with? Freddie Shepherd wanted to build it was either Freddie Shepherd or John Hall, but they wanted to build on Leasers Park in the mid-90s. That was kind of the plan, and it was dubbed the San Siro of the North is what it was going to be. It was be about a 70,000-odd seat stadium is what they were talking about at the time. And local residents weren't happy, and those plans didn't go ahead, which is why we went ahead with the extension instead of the Millburn stand and the Leasers. And I think I look at that now and I think, we'll probably be in a position where we have to upgrade the ground again if we'd done that. But now when we look at kind of where we are from the point of view of Leasers Park, or the arena site, which is, I think that's just been sold again for housing. But it's kind of finding what that option is. Someone said, you know, if you could build a stadium on the river, you could have a booze cruise to the game. So you could get, but you know what it is, you think about it.
I love it.
You could get on the Tyne, like you could get on either at Newburn or Bladen, or yeah, you could get on at Wall's End or North Shields or what have you. And, you know, people would make a day of it. And there's the guy who runs the Newcastle United Supporters Club, a guy called Daz Curry. He's ran boat trips in London before when we played Fulham last day of the season. That was the first time he did it when... it was Rafa Benitez's last game in charge. It was a glorious sunny day. We whacked them 4-0. But the highlight of this for a lot of fans that went down there was they called it the Geordie Armada, going down the Thames to the game. So there's lots of things to consider, but I just think that I love St James's Park. I do. And it holds a lot of memories. But I think we also have to be really, really realistic about the owners that we have and what they want to build and what they want to achieve. And we've not even begun to unlock the potential that this club has, I think, in terms of the supporter base outside of the Northeast. And you have to accept that if you're going to become one of the biggest clubs in Europe, which is what the owners aspiring to do, you have to untap that potential. And I actually think Spurs have done a really good job with doing that. And they have turned it into somewhere where you go and essentially they're very good at kind of turning you upside down and emptying your pockets in terms of kind of the options you've got. And people go to the ground and then staying in the ground after for a drink rather than like, kind of, because there's nowhere around Tottenham to drink, basically. So why would you go somewhere else? But the concourses are wide. You know, it's easy to go to the loo. It's easy to get a pint really quickly. I think the pours his paint from the bottom of the glass within 10 seconds or something, Dad.
Yes.
All that kind of stuff, right? And all of that kind of goes into it, but it needs to become, and it's horrible to say this because, you know, there's some people that can't afford to do it, but it needs to become a money-making machine. You know, it does, and all of that will help with PSR. And actually, the stadium is one of the very few areas that the owners can literally say, right, we're going to throw £1 billion at it. £1 billion at the Saudi public investment fund is not a lot of money at all. But then that's money that they can then get back through, and that then helps the PSR calculation and everything else. So but there is that part of me that thinks I've never watched Newcastle United play at home anywhere else but St James's Park.
Yeah. Do you know, I look at St James's Park, and I think that what they've done with regards to increasing the capacity, They've done really well when you consider, obviously, you've got, you know, housing around there, etc. It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, Old Roker Park, there was plans made to obviously expand that and build an extra tier or do whatever on whatever side of the ground. It would probably be harder at the clock stand because you've got little bungalows out the back of there and easier to do it sort of the main stand at the time. But it was never going to work. It was never going to work, to be perfectly honest with you. And the move away did as well. But I think the major selling point for St James's Park is the location. There's not many grounds in this country where you look at the location where it is, man. It's my missus works in a hair salon not far away from the ground. Basically, it's about a 2 second, 15 second walk away, whatever. And when I go meet her from work sometimes, I stand there waiting for her and I look at that ground, I think, anyway. But for where it is, when I see people going to the match, when I'm waiting for me wife when she finishes work, and I see that buzz and I can sense the excitement, and I was like, would you new stadium so much if it was sort of, out of the city centre or whatever? So, and it is a massive selling point. It's fantastic location wise where it is. It's a shame that it resembles Castle Grayskull, but never mind.
I think the thing for I'm just gonna skirt over that.
Sports, sorry.
That's the whole point of this. I think for me, the one non-negotiable is that it needs to stay in the city centre if they're going to build a new stadium. And, you can't build something out by the airport. You can't build something at Kingston Park. No. You can't go to Gateshead for me. Because although there's a die-hard Newcastle following in Gateshead, it's not Newcastle. Yep. Like, it isn't. And I think that bit's still really, really important. And I think that's the one thing. My preference would be that they build a new state. They do what Tottenham did, basically, and build a new stadium on the same site. But logistically, where do you then play your games? Now, I've made a suggestion before. It's not a very popular one. I think you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I do. Go on then.
But there's a very good stadium which is only about 12 or 13 miles away, which has the capacity to cover those season ticket holders. Now, and if Middlesbrough won't have one, there is the option, of course, Sunderland as well. I think the police probably say no to that. But that's a big stadium in the northeast that could accommodate. Now, I know Sunderland fans wouldn't be happy with that. Newcastle fans would probably think it's hilarious, but we already have a stand there, I suppose.
Oh, there it is.
So, but that's the obstacle is you're going to have 2 or 3 years when you're building a stadium, and where could you feasibly play? And, you have to consider what the sensible options are there and what could or couldn't work. But that's what I would want a new Spurs-esque job on the same site. If they could do it, but there are a lot of obstacles in terms of, you said about the housing, there's a metro station underneath. There's a lot of challenges there to make it work. But they have bought the land in Strawberry Place, so that's going to be a fan zone initially. But potentially that could be part of any extension, and there'd be a museum and all that kind of thing. We don't need a lot of space for the trophy cabinet, but that's another story. I've enjoyed that. Right, let's look forward. QPR at home. You're due a win.
We are due a win. QPR have really got nothing to play for either, have they? I don't know. We can't suffer 7 defeats in a row, because that hasn't happened for a long, long time. Someone came up with the statistics the other day and what year it was, and I was like, no. And hopefully with the home crowd behind us, hopefully, we'll give that players the extra lift that they need, the young players especially, and give them a boost. The crowd get the back the manager, Dodds, or the stand-in manager. They back him. They realise, he's inherited a team of young players, and the call it the Beale effect, who might have, taken a knock to the confidence even without the results not going the way. So, I don't know. I'm hoping for a win, but I'm just thinking, what team is he going to play and what formation is he going to play? I don't think Burstow is going to be given another chance up top to start in the near future. I would hope not anyway. And, you know, I don't like to chastise the young players or you know, but we maybe try something a bit different again. Roussin, I know he likes to play, he can play anywhere amongst the top three. He can play on the left, the right, and he can play as a striker. But we've tried that before. It sort of worked quite well. I'm going to go for a home win. I'm going to say it'll be an edgy one. And I'd go for 2-1 if I had to predict it.
Okay. No, I think, you know, you hope these kind of runs of form come to an end. And I'm going to do what I do every week, and we're going to have a look at the table. We're going to see where QPR are, and I'm going to say to you that you shouldn't really be worried about QPR. They're in 20th place. They are 8 or 9 points behind you. They're 1 point above the relegation zone. What I would say is they've got a fair bit to play for.
Mm-hmm. Because
they're still amongst it. So you've got. So just to kind of go through the bottom few clubs, you've got Plymouth and Blackburn and Stoke are all on 41. You've then got QPR and Birmingham on 39. You've then got Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday on 38. And then Rotherham are bottom on 19. So obviously Rotherham are, if they're not mathematically gone already, they're going to be. So it's 2 spots from what? 6, 7? Yeah, 2 from 7. And QPR are right amongst that. So they have got something to play for. And I suppose that's the question. Does Sunderland want it enough?
Do you know what I tend to look for, John, when it comes to games like this? I tend to look when we're on a run of bad defeats. I tend to look for the opposition side if they've got any former Sunderland players in their squad. They have. But it was a lone player from Burnley, big Jimmy Dunn, central defender, who I rated, to be fair, when he was on loan at our place when we're in League One, down in the Doldrums, that horrible, mean, unforgiving league, which I'm glad to see the back of. So, yeah, we may be in 12th place at the moment, and we might not have a lot to play for, but at least we're in a better position than we were a few seasons ago. That's the way I see it. But, yeah, I was thinking if big Jimmy Dunn plays, will he pop up from central defence and bang a header in or whatever? Because defensively at the moment, we're not great. I'm going to go for a home win, but I just don't know with my team at the moment. I just don't know. And
QPR aren't on bad form either.
Yes, well,
they're certainly not on as bad form because you've lost 6 in a row. But the 17th of Feb, they beat Bristol away from home 1-0. They then beat Rotherham at home 2-1, which, you know, it's Rotherham, bottom of the league. They then beat Leicester away.
Yes, I saw that.
Obviously, you know, Leicester probably going to win the championship this year. And then they drew at home to West Brom and then they lost to Middlesbrough. Mm-hmm. So actually, West Brom and Borough aren't terrible sides. Obviously, West Brom are 5th in the league. So they look like that. They're not far away from securing a place in the playoffs. Middlesbrough, if they put a bit of form together, potentially could get into the mix towards the end. And the thing with the playoffs is if you go into them in form, that's what you want, isn't it? You want to be hot at the right time. And very much like another sport I watch with the NFL, you know, when you hit that playoff time, if you're at it's the team in form that does well, not necessarily the team that's been strongest over the year. So it'll be really, really interesting. I suppose I'm going to have to talk about this. So Newcastle play in the FA Cup at the Etihad on Saturday. And that might be the end of me keep making reference to the fact that we're still in the FA Cup, which I'm very upset about. I'm not sure what chance we've got if Anthony Gordon's seriously injured. We haven't heard anything yet. Now, there's all sorts of... I've seen rumours of... Well, so we've heard it's not as bad as first feared. We've heard that. So that could mean anything from like 2, 4, 6 weeks to he's going to be out for 6 or 7 months. If it's the latter, then I'm not sure what we do. And Shaw turned around with us last night and she said, you know, if Isak gets injured, like who do we play up front?
And what because player? Yeah.
Wilson's not going to be back until back end of April, early May. And if Gordon's out for a sustained period of time, like, we literally have no other option up top apart from Isak. And Isak has not exactly proven himself to be a really durable player when he plays a lot of football. So, you know, we have some trouble there. I think if we were going to have a chance at City, we were going to have to go there pretty much close to full strength.
Yep.
Harvey Barnes is just, he had a minor hamstring injury last night. So it's kind of like, is he going to be in a position where he can play on Saturday? It sounds like he's not going to be in contention either. For that reason, I've gone from feeling fairly optimistic about we could go there and we could really give him a game to I'm not sure that we have a chance. So I'm going to predict a 2-0 defeat. But I will be watching from home. But it's just, I'm just a bit, it's just, it feels like this, the timing's just been off for us, yeah. I think if we'd had more of our players in contention, but they're just, man, I mean, they're a quality side, aren't they, Anth?
Unbelievable side. Do you know, you're talking about Anthony Gordon. I feel for him, actually, because the rumour was he may have been possibly a sort of, you know, an outside bet for the Euros for Gareth Southgate's squad. The form that he's shown since he's come to Newcastle, you know, I know he had his critics and what have you. I know Everton supporters are not massively keen on him because of the way he left, but he's sure that he is a quality player. And you'd rather, as a supporter, that the powers that be come out and say, right, well, this is the injury, this is how long they're going to come out for, and just come straight out with it. When it's humming and hawing like that, you sort of, you know, well, what is it? And what other options have we got? Like you say, you've only got one at the moment, haven't you, I suppose. So it's a tough one. And Manchester City are just phenomenal. I mean, you could go on and on about them, couldn't you? I mean, your Fordens, your Haalands, you know, just quality. So 2-0, De Bruyne, man, honestly, the Belgian bun, that hairstyle since he came back, man, he's grown, he's even more powerful. So, yeah, I just think you went for 2-0, did you?
Yeah.
Do you know what?
Maybe I'm being optimistic.
I think you're being a bit optimistic there. I don't know, I could be wrong, but I was thinking, I don't know, maybe it's the likes of, could be 3-0 or 3-1. I mean, I know there's only still two goals in it if I say 3-1, but it's a massive ask for you, isn't it, this weekend? A massive, massive ask for you. So.
And there's loads of talk about style of play and stuff, and we tried to press Chelsea last night, and but that's not where the goals came from. The goals came from, like, kamikaze defending.
Yeah.
And I think we need to think about what's our approach going into Saturday, because I think if we go and we play like we did against Wolves and we sit back, Man City will score. Because they've got the quality to unlock you and do that. Like, Wolves didn't have that quality. Whereas if we go out and we try and press them and we try and impress ourselves on the game and get ourselves into a position where we've got something to defend, then maybe that's another way to go. But yeah, I think when we're not at full strength and you're losing players like, you know, Trippier and Barnes and Gordon and, you know, obviously, we've had no Tonali for most of the season, no Joe Linton since the win at your place. You know, we're just not in a strong enough position. So, who knows? Anything can happen. It's the magic of the FA Cup, and we're the underdog. And we've played better in games when we're the underdog. When the expectations are low on us, we've turned up and we've performed. So I think that's what we need to do. We just need to show up and do what we can and attack it. And if we go out there and we perform really well and we lose, I'm happy as a football fan. I'd much rather go through, I'd take a bad performance and scraping through 1-0. But, you know, I think I don't want us to go up there and be humped 4 or 5. I think we're a better side than that. And we've been close with them, you know, a couple of times this year already. We lost 3-2 at St James's. We lost 1-0 at the Etihad, but we also beat them at St James's Park in the League Cup. So if we do knock them out, I'd love to see any other team that in since the takeover that has knocked out Man City of both domestic cups in the same season. I don't think there's been one. So
no.
On that note, we will leave it there. Anth, thank you so much for your time, as always. Everybody, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. If you're on YouTube, I'm going to ask you, if you liked this video, to press the button to say that you liked it. If you've got any feedback you want to give us, please put it in the comments below. We also have our Instagram and X accounts at Northeast Divide as well. So we are welcome to hear what you think of it, what you'd like to see more of, what you'd like to see less of. You'll notice we've done something slightly different with the background. Is that better? Is that worse? We're all ears, all right? But thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. Take care and goodbye.